Columbia, a Sony Pictures Entertainment Company. It's nighttime. A young man, Mort Rainey, is sitting in the driver's seat of his car, staring intently out of the windscreen, the wipers slashing back and forth.
Turn around. Turn around. Turn the car around and get the hell out of here. Right now.
He puts on a pair of spectacles, then releases the handbrake, turns the car around, and drives off. He slams on the brakes, bringing the car to an abrupt halt.
Don't go back. Do not go back there.
He looks out the back window, then reverses the car towards a motel. He parks outside, then throws open the car door and strides out into driving snow. He crosses the car park and heads into the motel office. He goes behind the empty desk and picks out a key from a rack. As he goes back outside, the motel manager emerges from another room.
Hey! Hey!
Mort gets back into his car and races across the car park, stopping outside a motel room. He dashes over to a red door, unlocks it, and opens it. A man and a woman are startled awake in bed. The woman looks beseechingly at Mort, and the man exchanges angry words with him. Mort screams with rage and turns away. Outside, the motel manager runs into the room. Moving away from the motel room, past the car with its door hanging open. Now, flying over the gently rippling waters of a lake towards a densely forested area. Columbia Pictures presents Johnny Depp, Secret Window. Moving towards a large cabin nestled among some trees by the side of the lake. John Turturro, Maria Bello, Timothy Hutton, Charles S. Dutton, Len Cariou. Slowly moving closer to the cabin. Rising up towards a small window tucked away high on the cabin wall. Music by Philip Glass. Moving through the window into a spacious, well-kept attic area. A bookshelf lines one wall, and the dog is asleep on a sofa. There's a laptop open on a writing desk, papers cluttered around it. On the screen are a few lines of unfinished prose. Moving past the laptop, over a pile of unopened mail, and then over a balcony towards a mirror. Based upon the story Secret Window, Secret Garden by Stephen King. Screenplay by David Kep. Mort's asleep on the living room couch, wearing a worn dressing gown ripped on the shoulder. Directed by David Kep. 6 months later. Mort stirs. The door handle turns. Mort turns over. His blonde hair an unkempt mess. He puts on his glasses and gets up, traipsing over to the door. A man wearing a large round black hat.
You stole my story. Will?
I'm sorry, did I? I don't believe I know you.
I know that. That doesn't matter. I know you, Mr. Rainey. That's what matters. You stole my story.
You're mistaken. I don't read manuscripts.
You read this one already. You stole it.
I can assure you that
I know you can. I know that. I don't want to be assured.
If you want to talk to someone about some grievance you feel you may have, you can call my literary agent.
This is between you and me.
Mort's dog sniffs around.
We don't need any outsiders, Mr. Rainey. It is strictly between you and me.
All right, look, Mr. Whoever you are, I don't like being accused of plagiarism, if that is in fact what you're accusing me of. Chico, inside.
I don't blame you for not liking it, but you did it. You stole my story.
You're gonna have to leave. I have nothing more to say.
Yeah, I'll go. We'll talk more later.
I'm not taking that.
Won't do you any good to play games with me, Mr. Rainey. This has got to be settled.
So far as I'm concerned, it is.
Mort closes and locks the door, then stands aside nervously, Chico looking up at him with a curious frown. Mort glances towards the window set in the front door. He crosses the room and looks through a larger window, watching the mysterious black-clad stranger go over to his old model car. He opens the door, throws his hat inside, then gets into the driver's seat. Mort looks at the license plate as the car pulls away. He turns back to the front door. He trudges over to the door, turns the lock, then opens it. Sitting on the porch is the manuscript, weighed down with a large round stone. Mort looks at it apprehensively, then glances across the porch in the direction that the stranger left. He slides the stone off the paper and picks up the manuscript. He reads the title page.
Sowing Season, John Shooter.
Taking the manuscript with him, Mort heads back inside.
Never heard of you, pal. Never heard of your story.
He throws the manuscript in the rubbish bin, then crosses to the kitchen sink and washes his hands with a bar of soap, vigorously foaming them up. He crosses over to the couch, shaking his hands dry.
Now.
He lays back down.
Where was I?
Chico's lying in his basket. Rain patters onto the lake. Mort's at his desk, staring at his laptop. The lines of prose stare back at him. A clock on the desk reads 10:26. Mort looks at the dog.
I'm open to suggestions.
Chico looks at him meekly. Mort stands up and looks over the balcony railing at a cleaning lady vacuuming the living room.
If you don't go and bite her, I'll kill her.
Mort sits back down and rubs his hands together. He reads the text.
4 days after Georgia confirmed to his own satisfaction that his wife was cheating on him, he confirmed this is just bad writing.
He plays with a slinky.
Just bad writing. So you know what to do. Just do it.
Mort highlights the text.
No bad writing.
He deletes it, leaving an empty page.
I think that solves it.
The dog curls up on an armchair. Mort trudges into the kitchen, popping some food into his mouth. He opens the fridge and takes out a can of drink. He notices the creased manuscript laying on the table.
Oh, I found one of your stories in the trash, Mr. Rainey. I thought you might want it, so I put it on the table.
Yeah, I see that, Mrs. Garvey.
As she heads out, he points a finger gun at her, then sits down at the table. Picking up the manuscript, he turns over the title page, revealing the first page of fiction. He reads,
Todd Downey thought that a woman who would steal your love when your love was really all you had was not much of a woman. He therefore decided to kill her. He would bury her in the deep corner formed where the house and the barn came together at an extreme angle. He would bury her where his wife kept her garden. The garden she loved more than she loved him.
Oh, thank God. From the sound of you, I didn't know what to think. Here, let me get this. That's my job.
I'm terribly sorry, Mrs. Garvey. I really am.
I'll take care of this, Mr. Rainey. Go on back to work.
I didn't write this.
Oh, I thought you did.
No, it's not mine. Look, it says John Shooter right there. John Shooter. It's not me.
Oh, I thought it was one of those, whatchamacallem, pseudonames or NIMs.
No, I never used one. I've never used one.
Oh, I can't imagine why you would. I mean, hide behind some made-up name.
No, Mrs. Garvey, what I'm trying to tell you is that someone else wrote this story.
Oh, okie dokie, then.
Mort slides a book off the shelf and sits at his writing desk. The cover shows some fingers about to slot a coin into a slot, and the title, Everybody Drops the Dime, by Mort Rainey. Mort checks a list of story titles on the contents page, then flicks through the book until he finds the story he's looking for, Secret Window. He reads,
A woman who would steal your love when your love was all you had wasn't much of a woman. That at least was Tommy Havelock's opinion. He decided to kill her. He even knew the place he would bury her, the exact place. The little patch of garden she kept in the extreme angle formed where the old and new parts of the house came together. He'd bury her in the garden she loved more than she loved him.
Why don't you come to the flea market with me? It'll be fun. We've got to get rid of some of this stuff. Look at this. It's awful. No wonder they left it.
Mort's remembering.
Oh, my God, look, there's a window. It's a secret window. Oh, this is perfect. I'm going to put my garden right there. It's a secret window, and it'll look down on a secret garden.
Crouching beside the window, it's the same woman that Mort caught at the motel, Amy. The vision fades away, and Mort looks back at the manuscript. He compares the words in the manuscript to the words in his short story. He shakes his head, turning the pages. Over and over again, the sentences match up, and he slams the book closed. He opens a desk drawer, an empty packet of crisps spilling crumbs over various items. He opens another drawer, then another, and rummages among some papers until he finds what he's looking for, a cigarette packet. He glances towards the stairs, then smiles at the dog as he tugs out a cigarette and puts it in his mouth. He looks intently at the dog.
I didn't steal it. What?
He lights the cigarette.
Mr. Rainey!
Mm-hmm.
I'm all done.
Really, so soon? Well, I'll see you next time.
Mr. Rainey. There's something I want to say.
Oh, no.
Some women don't know a good thing when they got it. Some women don't know they got the whole world, and it's right in front of their nose. Mm-hmm. There. That's it. Not another word from me.
Mort brings the cigarette out of hiding.
Mr. Rainey, can I make you something to eat?
No, I ate. Well, earlier. I'm going to eat later, and I'll make it myself.
You're a good man, Mr. Rainey.
You too, Mrs. Garvey.
She heads down the stairs. He takes out his cigarette and draws on it.
My personal business, Mrs. Garvey. Thank you very much. My personal business. Oh, my pillows. You're sticking weird fingers in my privacy.
Mort lays down on the sofa.
I didn't steal that story.
He turns onto his back, staring at the ceiling.
I don't think.
The clock reads 10 to 12. Mort's eyelids close heavily. The clock reads 25 past 1. Mort envisions the front door rattling violently, shafts of brilliant white light streaming through the window. The ringing rouses Mort just as he was imagining the approach of a silhouetted figure in a wide-brimmed hat. He fumbles for the phone. Blearily, he realizes it's on a table on the other side of the room, and he stumbles over to fetch it before crashing back onto the sofa.
Hello.
Hello, Mort. Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. Why wouldn't I be all right?
I don't know. You're up there all alone. Anything could happen and nobody would know.
I know.
Right. Hey, how's my little baby puppy? Did Chico ever get those cataracts removed?
Why did you call, Amy? What do you want?
I had one of those feelings I get. I know you think they're stupid and you don't believe them. But I believe them. And I was making a sandwich and I had this sensation that you might not be okay. I held off as long as possible. But then I couldn't anymore, so here I am.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, except I'm fine.
Nothing weird happened or anything?
Do you remember Secret Window?
What?
My story, you know, the one where the woman has the garden.
And the guy has the shovel.
Not one of my favorites.
That's good to know.
Well, it was kind of hostile, don't you think?
Gee, I miss your constructive criticism. I really do.
What about the story, Mort?
Well, I was just wondering, do you think it's possible that, like, I might have been influenced by anybody or anything at the time?
Other than Jack Daniels?
I know that part, maybe. Hence the question.
I don't know. You got kind of weird on that one. You'd write it mostly at night, I think. What do you mean influenced, anyway?
I don't know.
Like by another story?
Look, forget it.
Mort, you swore the one time was the only time.
Forget it, please, please, just forget it, come on. How's Ted?
He's fine.
I was thinking that he and I should get together sometime, have a drink, because, you know, we've been to a lot of the same places.
You know what, I gotta go.
So do I.
Okay.
Is he there?
No. We're not together.
Wow, well, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't on the verge of doing Snoopy dances.
No, Mort. What I meant was we're not together at the moment. He's coming over later. He hardly ever comes here. I usually go to his house.
There's a useful detail. Thanks for that.
Don't ask then. It was working just fine that way.
I think you should have him over to the house more. Such a nice house. I like it. I mean, I love it. That's why I bought it.
Goodbye, Mort.
Goodbye, Amy.
Mort sits up and holds his head in his hands.
Shit, 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 stupid, stupid, stupid.
Mort's walking along a path. He slaps the back of his neck as he trudges on, using a long branch for a walking stick. He stops when he sees John Shooter waiting by his car up ahead.
You read it?
I did.
I imagine it rang a bell, didn't it?
Oh, it certainly did. When did you write it?
I thought you'd ask that.
Well, sure, that's the whole point, isn't it? When two writers show up with the same story, it's all about who wrote the words first. Wouldn't you say that's true?
I suppose I would. I suppose that's why I came all the way up here from Mississippi.
A green pickup truck goes by, and Shooter gestures an acknowledgement to its unseen driver.
I wrote it 7 years ago, 1997.
How'd you get it? That's what I really want to know. How in the hell did a big money scribbling asshole like you get down to a little shit splat town in Mississippi and steal my goddamn story?
Drop it.
Drop it? Drop it? What in the hell do you mean, drop it?
You said you wrote your story in 1997. I wrote mine in late 94. It was published for the first time in June 1995 in a magazine. Nice try, Mr. Shooter, but I beat you by 2 years. So if anybody's got a bitch about plagiarism, it's me.
You lie! No, I don't! Prove it!
I don't have to prove a thing to you. Go look for yourself. Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, June 1995.
And how am I supposed to find that?
That's not my problem.
Am I supposed to drive down to your house in Riverdale, New York, and ask your wife Amy for it?
I read it on your book jacket.
That's not my house, that's hers.
What the hell does that mean?
What do you think it means, you ignorant hick? I'm in the middle of a divorce. D-I-V-O-R-C-E. Divorce!
You strike me as the kind of guy who's on the lookout for a head he can knock off with a shovel. But what you don't understand is if we do start the fight, It's not going to end until one or the other of us is dead.
He leans into his car.
Hold your water. I'm just getting my smokes.
I don't smoke.
I'll give you 3 days. You call your ex and get her to send you the magazine with your story in it, if there is such a magazine, and I'll be back.
If I show it to you, will you go back to wherever you came from and leave me alone?
He nods.
3 days.
Always a pleasure to meet a reader.
Now, there's a half-eaten sandwich on a plate in front of Mort as he sits at a table with a dog at his feet. A leaky tap drips nearby, while Mort stares sullenly at the sandwich before looking down at the hungry and hopeful face of Chico.
I don't want a car. I want to go to sleep. I want to take a nap. Huh? Okay, no nap. I give her a call about the magazine. I go write some crap for a couple of hours. And then I get to take a nap. Right? Chico? Chico, don't be discouraged. All right, go ahead and be discouraged, you blind bastard. See if I care. I'm returned to the couch. In shame. Degradation.
Mort's pulled out the telephone line.
Sloth. Sloth.
Lying on the sofa, he drifts off into slumber. Later, all around is dark when Mort restlessly rolls over in his sleep, opening his eyes to see crashing waves far below the side of the sofa. He falls, waking as he hits the floor. He rubs his forehead and squints at his watch, which he picks up from the table next to the sofa. He puts on his glasses to look at it properly. Mort pours himself a glass of water from the dripping tap. He's about to drink from it when he stops, surprised by something he's seen through a window. Something white is flapping in the wind outside. Curious, Mort puts the glass down on a counter and steps through the back door. He tries to turn a light on, but there's no bulb in the outdoor lamp. Going back inside, he returns with a torch. The beam picks out the remains of the broken bulb below the lamp, and Mort walks out across the porch to investigate further. Mort opens a door at the end of the porch and casts the torchlight around the surrounding trees. It plays across his car, which is parked nearby. He goes down some steps and finds a note pinned to the wall by the window. It reads, "You have 3 days. I am not joking. No police." Resting on a wooden bunker below the window is something covered with a sheet. Beneath the sheet, Mort finds Chico, dead. Shocked, he moves the torchlight all around. Now closing and locking all the cabin's windows and doors. He gazes about the cabin, looking tense. As red morning light is reflected on the waters of the lake, Mort finishes digging a hole with a shovel. Later, he's with a local sheriff.
Chico? He killed Chico?
Yeah. Last night around 9, I was asleep. He left this.
You've 3 days, I'm not joking, no police. Anytime somebody sits down and writes no police, That's just about exactly the time that a fella should get himself over to the police.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I figured. So what I've got is a detailed description of him. I've got a detailed description.
Type a little harder. You have to get through the carbon.
You know what? I didn't get the license plate number, but I'm sure that it had Mississippi tags, and I think that it started with an A. That's what I see in my mind.
Needlepoint. Can you believe it? Doc says it's good for the arthritis.
Yeah. Anyway, anything you can find out about this guy, I'd really appreciate it.
I must cut quite an intimidating law enforcement figure, huh?
I'd like to know what I'm dealing with here, because maybe he's got a violent history. I mean, maybe you can find him. Maybe you can talk to him. I think that would probably be better.
So you got yourself a member of the Crazy Folks tribe?
Yeah. I mean, they pop up every once in a while. I suppose it's just the price of selling a few books.
Sorry.
Here's the description.
Killing an animal isn't like killing a man. Yeah. I'm not even sure that it's a crime, come to think.
Come on, it's gotta be. What about animal cruelty? What about destruction of private property? What about...
Maybe. Okay. First thing I'm going to need is a description.
Tell me the truth. Did you steal it?
What? No.
Kind of an amazing coincidence, don't you think? The stories being so much alike.
Well, obviously the guy copied it from me. Would you like to choose a side before we continue?
I'm on your side, but I still need to know the truth. Which kind of situation is this? Is he a regular wacko like you've had before, in which case I can help? Or is this something you should be talking to your lawyer about?
No, this guy is just simply out of his mind. That's all it is.
Fine.
Okay. What do you want me to do?
I want you to help me in the same way that... in the same way that you did before.
He wasn't this crazy. That guy was just an obsessed reader who couldn't tell real life from the crap you make up for a living. No offense. Now, this shooter guy, he threatened your life?
He put a screwdriver through my dog.
Well, he did break a law, but it doesn't seem to be a very important law in Tashmore Lake. The sheriff must be a cat person.
Yeah, well, I don't exactly feel safe with a 70-year-old arthritic sheriff watching my back. Are you gonna help me or not?
Let's see. I got a corporate loyalty thing I gotta be back for on Friday, but I can give you a couple of days.
Okay. My story came out a couple years before he says he wrote his. So I've got a copy of the original up at Amy's house. I'm just gonna stop by on my way upstate and pick it up.
Amy's house?
Yeah. Amy and I split up about 6 months ago.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too.
Amicable?
Not remotely.
What happened? Did you finally nail one of your groupies at a book signing? The Omaha Barnes & Noble?
Mort clicks off Ken's timer.
That was a dick thing to say, you know. Rotten profession. I apologize. You were saying?
I was saying that if it's just proof that this guy Shooter wants, fine. I show him the magazine, but I think that maybe you should be with me when I show it to him.
No shit, I'm going to be with you. You remember my rate?
Yeah, an obscene fortune, right?
Look, you'll see a black Cadillac in the driveway tonight when you get home. Don't freak out, it's me, keeping an eye on things.
Okay.
Get a good night's sleep. You don't look too hot.
Mort's driving along a highway and is soon entering a leafy neighborhood of residential houses. He drives slowly past Amy's house before pulling up in someone's driveway on the other side of the road. Turning the engine off, he watches in a rear-view mirror as Amy emerges from the house with a man in a light-colored suit. They're talking animatedly and kiss before climbing into a car.
This is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife anymore.
The couple drive off, and looking thoughtful and sad, Mort rubs his mouth with his hand. There's a nearly full moon above the trees of the forest when Mort's car pulls up outside the cabin. He notices Ken's car is parked nearby. He He glances about. Then, seeing Ken's head resting against his window, Mort turns the engine off and gets out of his own car. Mort's decidedly nervy as he cautiously steps towards Ken's vehicle. As he nears it, he bends down to see inside better. Ken remains completely still as Mort taps on the glass.
Oh! You scared the shit out of me.
Hey, yeah, I'm sorry about that. This last week must have finally caught up with me.
That's very reassuring. Thanks.
Hey, relax, Hemingway. I was only out 10 minutes, swear to God. Mm. Already checked the place. Everything is fine. Just waiting for you to get back to let you know.
You think you'd be sticking around tonight, or?
No. Well, unless you want me to.
No, I'm sure it's fine. In there.
Nope. No monsters up here.
You check under my bed?
Even in your toy chest. I'll be back in the morning. Start asking around town. What the hell are you gonna do with that sailor? Huh? Find out who else saw your nut job.
Tom Greenleaf. Huh? Tom Greenleaf passed by when I was talking to Shooter out on Lake Drive. He waved at us, so he must have gotten a good look at it.
Tom Greenleaf. How do I get a hold of him?
Bowie's store, breakfast every morning, 9 a.m.
Okay, I got it. Don't worry. Once I find out where the shooter's staying, I'll stop in for a little freak-me-out chat. Use the word we a lot. We know what you're doing. We wanted to stop. We're watching you.
Yeah.
Trust me, he'll hit the road so hard, it'll hit back.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Are you staying in town tonight?
Yeah, some motel out by Route 9, Irv's Lakeside, or I think it's called. You know the place?
Yeah, I know the place.
Okay, good night.
Mort's remembered the motel is where he found Amy with her lover. He bolts the door and stands for a moment, drumming on his thighs, as, outside, Ken gets into his car. Mort walks a few paces with his hands behind his back before turning to peer through the window at Ken's departure. He's about to pull a shade down when he's startled by a noise behind him.
Hello?
He scans the upper floor beyond a balcony just as Ken's car finally drives away. Mort's about to go and investigate when he pauses, looking around him and fetching a poker from a stand. Wielding the implement, he moves towards the foot of the stairs before, slowly, heading up them. Mort arrives on the upper floor and has a look around, but sees nothing unusual. He turns and uses the poker to open a door behind him. The bedroom beyond is shrouded in darkness, and he flicks on a light switch. Walking past the unmade bed and holding the poker raised and ready, Mort approaches a wardrobe and is in the process of pulling its door open with the poker when another noise comes from behind him. Having spun round to face a door on the other side of the room, the increasingly nervous-looking Mort takes a couple of steps towards it so he can see inside. It's a bathroom, and he catches sight of some movement within.
I know you're in there, shithead. If you don't come out by the time I count to five, I'm gonna come in swinging.
He wipes a sweaty palm on his trousers.
One. Two.
He lunges into the bathroom and swings the poker violently. Switching on a light, he views the results.
I killed the mirror.
He swings out again.
And my shower door.
Pulling the shattered door aside, Mort sees a small mouse in the bath, sitting amidst the glass fragments. Mort drops the poker and picks up a cloth from a shelf. He then crouches by the bath, tosses the cloth over the mouse, and carefully picks it up. The cabinet the mirror was mounted in has fallen off the wall. Mort's about to head downstairs with the mouse when he diverts to his desk and picks up the cigarette packet with its one remaining cigarette. After a moment, he drops the packet and its contents back onto the desk and continues downstairs. He then comes running back up them and pulls the cigarette from the packet with his mouth.
Okay, I'm just gonna smoke. I'm just gonna totally smoke. There's these. Go to the store, get a brand new pack. Smoke the shit out of that.
Stepping outside, Mort moves a short distance from the cabin before crouching down to release the mouse. It scuttles away. Mort sparks up a match on the ground and lights the cigarette.
Thought you didn't smoke.
Mort takes a puff.
I took it up recently for my health.
How are you, Mr. Rainey?
Oh, I'm just peachy, Mr. Shooter. How are you?
Well, it sounded like you pitched a fit or something in there. I don't think you're really all that well. Stealing from another man, that don't seem to have ever bothered you none. Being caught up on, though. Or maybe it's just that successful writers like you throw tantrums when things don't go the way they expect. Why didn't you get that magazine? You were down there at her house today, weren't you?
If I get the story and I show it to you, you then kindly disappear.
There isn't any magazine with that story in it, Mr. Rainey. You and me, we know that.
Okay, then. What can we do to make you feel better?
Briefly, Mort touches the shovel handle standing in the ground behind him.
I want you to fix it.
What would you like me to fix?
My ending. The one you wrecked. I can't decide what's worse. Stealing my story or ruining the ending. Mine was perfect.
I don't think I even read your whole story.
Oh, I bet you did. I know I can do it. Todd down his head, helping himself to another ear of corn from the steaming bowl. I'm sure that in time, her death will be a mystery even to me. That's how the story ends, Pilgrim. It's the only ending. You're gonna write it for me and get it published, and it's gonna have my name on it.
I'd be more than happy to write your ending, Mr. Shooter.
So that wife of yours coming out of the house, she's pretty.
My wife? Why don't we just leave her out of this?
Would if I could. But I'm starting to think you ain't going to leave me that option.
Mort tries to hit him with a shovel, but Shooter grabs it.
I want to wake up from one of your stupid naps and find Amy nailed to your garbage bin, or turn on the radio some morning and hear she came off second best in a match with the chainsaw you keep out in the shed. Do you? You can't get away with it. I know what you did, and I ain't quitting until right gets put right.
Shooter walks off into the dark, leaving Mort struggling for breath on the ground. Later, Mort looks troubled as he lies on his bed, staring off into space. He rolls onto his back, still lost in deep reflection, before grabbing his glasses and getting up. It's morning, and Mort's sitting on the sofa, scoffing from a large crisp bag he's cradling. He stares at the telephone in front of him, then idly glances over at the wall. He shuffles to the wall and plugs the telephone cable back in. He then returns to the sofa. Slightly startled, he stares at the phone for a moment before answering.
Is that you, John Wayne?
Mort? Are you there? Mort?
Yes, Amy, I'm here. Just lower your voice a little. What is it?
Where have you been? I have been trying to get a hold of you all night and this morning.
I was asleep.
Oh, great. So you unplugged the phone?
How may I assist you, Amy?
Oh, God, Mort.
What happened? What?
Someone burned down our house. That's what happened, okay?
What?
Firemen are on the scene as Mort walks with his hands in his pockets towards the blackened, burned-out remains of the house. His expression is cheerless as he remembers back to the time when he lived there with Amy.
Bye, babe!
Pardon me, miss. I noticed that you left $100 on the dresser. Well, surely the escort service told you that I was three.
Please.
I mean, some guys are less, some guys are 100, if you like that kind of thing. Some guys are even less than that, but I'm three. I happen to be three. There's something on your mouth just there. Bye.
The white painted walls fade, and Mort is looking upon the charred ruin once more. Amy and Ted appear, and Amy spots Mort.
Mort?
As she approaches, Mort flashes on the thought of her making love to Ted.
Hi.
Hi.
They hug.
Really sorry about all this, Amy.
So am I.
Me too. Thank you, Ted.
Mr. and Mrs. Rainey.
Yes.
You the owners?
Yes, we are. We were the owners.
Were the owners? What do you mean? You don't own it anymore?
We're Mr. and Mrs. Rainey are the owners.
I'm Stephen Bradley. I'm a detective with Riverdale PD.
How do you do, Ted Milner?
This is Fire Chief Wickersham.
Chief?
Hi.
We won't keep you long. The insurance investigator needs to see you in the city at 3.
You're definitely the victims of arson. The fire was started by an incendiary device made with a champagne bottle and a couple of quarts of plain old gasoline.
Well, that really works then, eh?
So first question, enemies. You got any?
No, no one.
No, not a soul.
Bother you if I answer one or two of these, Ted?
It's okay. It's
cool. Yeah. I have an enemy.
Sorry I wasn't there to meet you this morning. I spent most of last night poking around the site with a flashlight and a Polaroid. Oops. Broke one of my own rules. I don't like to call it the site. It wasn't a site. It was a house. Your house. And I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Evans.
That still says Mrs. Fran is fine. These meetings are hard. People in your situation are already upset, and quite often they take the presence of an investigator as an accusation that they've torched their own property. And in this case, you've certainly given us a plausible suspect who will investigate aggressively along with the police. But in the meantime, that's a list of your claimed insurable property. You look it over, then you'll sign an affidavit swearing that the listed items still belong to you and that they were still in the house when the fire occurred. I'm told there was a separation of residence recently, so that last bit might be particularly important.
We're going through a divorce. It's not final yet.
Well, the settlement agreement's all done. Everything's been negotiated. We're just waiting for it to be signed by both parties.
I moved out 6 months ago and just hadn't gotten around to hauling all this stuff out yet. So.
Been down that road. It sucks. These things just have to follow their natural course. Things will wrap up when everybody's ready for that to happen.
That's been my feeling.
In the meantime, do the best you can with the list.
Thanks.
Mort and Amy look down and study the list. Ted looks over Amy's shoulder, peering at it himself. He moves closer to get a better look, and Mort becomes peeved.
I'm sorry, excuse me. Do you actually intend to rubberneck?
I hardly think my concern could be construed as rubbernecking.
Amy, he's rubbernecking.
Okay.
I'm not gonna freak out about this, but I
what the hell's the point?
This is our stuff.
I'm just trying to be helpful.
No,
it's our stuff.
Why would we
here? This is our stuff.
He's right. He's right, Ted.
He is right, Mr. Milner. The law says that you have no right to be looking at the listed items at all. We wink at something like this if nobody minds, but it looks like Mr. Rainey does.
Yes. Mr. Rainey minds a lot.
Would it help matters if I took a walk around the block?
Yes, thanks.
Sure.
Oh, heck, Ted, live a little. Make it two. Rubbernecker.
Soon after, Mort and Amy are traveling in a lift with a man who's wearing sunglasses and listening to a personal stereo. As the doors open, the man barges past them.
Mort. Wait, Mort, I need to ask you something.
What?
This guy, a shooter. His story, I mean, is this situation, is it like the other time?
Ugh.
I'm sorry I wouldn't bring it up, but it did happen once before.
Look, that is the only time I've ever done anything remotely like that. I paid the guy everything he wanted. Never happened before or since.
Okay.
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 Amy?
What?
You and me and the lawyers are the only people that know about that, right?
Right.
Because you haven't said anything to Ted, certainly not.
No.
Have you said something to Ted?
Come on.
Well, do I have time or what?
Yes, you do. I'm real sorry you had to miss that. I know how much you like my things.
Oh, Jesus.
You and me are gonna have a little talk. Be back in 10 minutes.
I'm in trouble.
Ted and Mort step outside.
Look, I've had about enough of your bullshit.
You're a dick.
Do you feel better?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, look, marriage is in. I'm sorry, but I didn't end yours. You know, it was done by the time I got there.
Oh, really? You must have thought her wedding ring was a little bit strange.
Oh, man, listen, I apologized to you months ago. Now, look, I know you don't want me in your life. Guess what? I don't want you in mine either, but until this little divorce thing's done, not much we can do about it. But I'll tell you something. I will not let you upset Amy any more than you already have. So why don't we just wrap this little thing up, all right, and get out of each other's lives? Are we, getting the message I'm sending?
Where are we from, Teddy?
Tennessee. Morty.
I was gonna say Mississippi.
No, long way from there. A little place called Shooter's Bay.
Ted walks off, and Mort's about to go in the other direction when he pauses, mulling this over. Now it's nighttime, and Mort's driving up to the cabin. There's no sign of Ken's car.
Oh, gosh. $500 a day, where are you when I need you?
He pulls up by the back porch, stops the engine, and gets out. Mort unlocks the cabin door and hangs up his keys, then turns on a light before hurrying across the room to answer the phone.
Hell. Yeah.
Where you been all day?
Oh, I might ask you the same question.
Relax, you're fine. I checked the cabin an hour ago.
Yeah, well, he showed up about an hour after you left last night.
Oh, really? And he had a busy night.
My office called me about your Riverdale house. I'm sorry.
Well, the worst part is, I hadn't had a chance to get the magazine out. You know, the one that the story says I stole. That's gone up in smoke now.
Do you still want to go through with it? Meeting him, showing him the magazine?
Hell yes, man. I've had a shitty year. I want it settled. Now, everything.
Good. Because I called your agent when I heard about the house.
I figured he'd have a copy of the magazine. He sent the original by UPS overnight today. You can pick it up tomorrow after 3.
I knew that was the reason I hired you.
There's something else.
I caught up with your Tom Greenleaf today. The guy who drove past you and Shooter on the lake road?
Well, he's a weird one. First, yeah. He says he did go down to the lake drive on Tuesday and he saw you, like you said.
But then he gets nervous and says, no. Come to think of it, I didn't see anybody. Wasn't even on lake drive on Tuesday.
Yeah, well, Tom's old. Maybe just slipped his mind.
Don't be naive. He was scared shitless. Somebody got to him.
Come come on, wait. Why would Shooter care if Tom Greenleaf knows he's here?
Well, it depends.
On what?
On what he plans to do to you. I'm revising my opinion, Mort. I don't think Shooter's just some nut.
We need to consider the possibility that he was hired to do this. Somebody with a grudge against you. Hire is a tough guy to rattle you, scare you to death, but...
He hires the wrong guy. Things get out of control. They go further than they're supposed to. Dead dogs. Burnt down houses. Now he can't call him off.
Ted.
Who?
Ted. Amy's Ted. The Ted that Amy left me for. Maybe that's why the guy calls himself Shooter. Ted wants me to know it's him. He's trying to intimidate me. He's trying to send me a message.
Why? What does he want?
I don't know. Did you piss him off?
I might have.
Okay, here's what we do.
What proof do you have that Shooter was there?
Other than the manuscript. Physical evidence I'm talking about.
Bruises.
I got bruises on my arms from where he grabbed me.
All right. You and me are gonna go see Greenleaf together.
All right.
Bring the manuscript. Bring your bruises. I'm gonna push the guy hard, make it impossible for him to lie. If he'll tell the police he was threatened to, then we've got something.
Bowie's store? Breakfast?
9 a.m. sharp.
All right, I'll see you there.
And bring your six-gun, Pilgrim.
Looking uneasy, Mort hangs up. Later, he lies sleeplessly in bed.
It is a good ending.
He places his hands behind his neck and thinks a moment longer before sitting up. He works his jaw open and shut.
Shit.
Getting up, he pulls on his dressing gown. Now, light is pouring through one of the cabin's windows. The clock reads 10:15 as Mort lies asleep on the sofa, still wearing his glasses. Stirring, he stretches and eventually glances at his watch.
Shit!
Fully dressed, he leaps to his feet, grabs his jacket from the floor, and is about to head out when he notices that his keys are no longer hanging where he left them. Mort checks all his pockets, but to no avail. He pulls on a woolen hat, looking worried. Stepping out onto the porch, he looks down and sees Shooter's black hat resting on the floor by the large round stone. Mort looks warily about before walking to the door at the end of the porch. He sees that his car has been moved and the driver's door has been left open. Approaching the vehicle, Mort discovers that the engine is still running. He slides into the driver's seat and, being careful not to touch the steering wheel, turns off the engine. He looks around the interior of the car and examines the ashtray in which he finds a cigarette butt. He picks it out and studies it.
Oh, Mal. Cracker bastard.
Now, Mort is opening up a large plastic bag which he places over the hat. Soon, he's thrown the bagged hat onto the passenger seat of the car and is starting the engine. Later, Mort's carrying the bag as he enters a general store and diner. He accidentally bangs the door behind him.
Sorry.
The patrons at the counter turn away, and Mort walks towards some grocery aisles.
Ken?
He searches the aisles.
Tom?
Rubbing his nose, Mort takes a seat at the diner bar, placing the bag on the counter. The man sitting next to him stares at Mort, and so Mort moves the bag down onto an empty stool. He casts his eyes over to where a man behind the counter is stacking a shelf with Pall Mall cigarettes.
Would you like a pack?
I don't smoke.
To a woman.
Did a guy come in here looking for me around 9 o'clock?
Nope.
Big guy, kind of a New York cop type.
No. No, that doesn't ring a bell.
I overslept.
Well, maybe he did too, because he wasn't here.
Yeah.
As Mort drives along a tree-lined road, he spots a man putting petrol into a black car at a roadside petrol station. Mort stops his car and thinks for a moment, tapping the steering wheel with his fingers. He puts his car into reverse and backs into the driveway of the petrol station, just in front of the black car. The man at the petrol pump is Ted. Mort gets out to confront him.
What are you doing here?
Matter of fact, I was just on my way over to your place.
Where's your buddy?
Came alone.
Sure you did.
The two men approach each other warily.
I know what you're up to. Look, Mort, a lot of what's going on right now is my fault. Most of it, in fact. What do you want?
I want you out of our life. Gotta sign your papers, Mort.
My divorce papers?
Mm-hmm.
Tell her to send them to my lawyer.
Yeah, well, she did, and he said that you won't return his calls for
weeks.
That's
what this is all about. Get me to sign this
out. No, just calm down.
Money!
No, it's
all
not
about money.
What this is about is getting this thing done, because I'm afraid if we don't, well, who knows where it might go, and I think you know what I'm talking about.
Well, Teddy, I think I do, but here's the problem. I don't respond well to intimidation. It makes me feel icky.
I'm attempting to have a normal conversation here.
I buried my dog, mister. This whole thing is out of your control now. You know it, and I know it. You started this shit. I'm gonna finish it. And do me a favor. Go back and tell that to your filthy little friend.
Ted hurts himself trying to hit Mort.
Bummer, Ted.
Mort arrives back at the cabin. He hangs his keys up on the wall before removing Shooter's hat from the plastic bag. He hurls the bag aside and throws the hat down on top of the telephone. Taking off his woolen hat, Mort turns to stare at the phone ringing beneath the wide-brimmed hat.
Yeah?
Go to where we met the other day. Walk down the path a little way.
Why?
I'll catch up with you this afternoon. Anybody you call between now and then is your responsibility.
Mort hangs up. Now, he's running along the path near the cabin. He stops dead when he sees Tom Greenleaf's truck parked in a clearing up ahead. Slowly, he begins to walk towards it. There's no immediate sign of anyone in the truck, but Mort starts to skirt around it, keeping his distance as he draws parallel to the driver's seat. Nervously, he stops and stares at the vehicle.
Tom? Greenleaf?
Tom slouched behind the wheel with a screwdriver in his head. Mort gags, then sees Ken's body in the back seat. Horrified, he backs away. Turning, he sees a squirrel on the branch of a tree. The squirrel chatters. Then the world spins as Mort slumps to the ground in a faint.
Quarter past two. You've been out about 3 hours. Your leg's sleeping. You laid on the damn thing. I would have moved you, but I didn't want to wake you. Got tired of waiting. Almost pinned a note on you. Decided not to. You scared too easy. I wouldn't go too far if I were you. I hooked you to those two men in more ways than you know.
You're insane. I'm going to the police.
Whose screwdriver you think is in that fella's head? If you leave him here and I disappear, you're gonna find yourself standing with your head in the noose and your feet in Crisco.
What do you want from me?
Why, I told you that already, Mr. Rainey. I want you to fix my story, the one you stole. Why ain't you ready to admit it yet?
I did not steal your story.
Oh, I expect you'll let yourself go to Green Haven for murder before you'll admit it.
I have the magazine, you lunatic. I have the magazine! I have the goddamn magazine!
You have this so-called magazine right now?
On me? No. I was gonna go pick it up at 3 o'clock.
There can't be any magazine. Not with that story in it. That story is mine.
What do you want? If you want to kill me, why don't you just do it? Just kill me.
No, sir. These others here were gonna get in the way of our business. I couldn't have that. You bring me that story, if it exists. Your house in 2 hours. You got some heavy lifting here first. I'd get to it if I were you. By the way, if you talk to that sheriff of yours again, or if you don't show up at 4 o'clock, I will burn your life and every person in it like a cane field in a high wind.
When I show you the magazine that has my name on the contents page with my story inside, then what?
Then I turn myself in. But I take care of myself before a trial, Mr. Rainey, because if things turn out that way, then I suppose I am crazy. And that kind of crazy man has no reason or excuse to live. Listen, you got my hat. I want it, one way or the other.
Shooter turns and walks off on a path leading back into the forest. Mort returns to Tom's truck and stares grimly in at his body. He looks at Ken's bloody body in the back seat, then, reluctantly, climbs onto the passenger seat next to Tom's corpse. He sits on an axe, which he quickly pushes to the floor. He sidles closer to Tom and, looking disgusted, blows out some air. He places his hand up to the handle of the screwdriver, but chickens out. He tries again, this time using a brown paper bag he's found beneath the dashboard. Ken's body slipped sideways, scaring Mort. Now, Mort started the truck's engine and taken off its parking brake. Steering it through the window as he walks alongside it, he guides the truck down a dirt road. It begins to pick up speed, rolling ever quicker towards the edge of a sheer drop into the lake. The truck rolls over a rock and Tom's head falls forward onto the horn, trapping Mort's arm. Mort pushes the body back, but finds his watch strap is caught on the gear shift mounted on the steering wheel. The edge of the precipice looms closer and he struggles to break free, tearing his hand loose from the watch just as the truck flies off the edge and into the lake. Mort watches it sink beneath the water. Back at the cabin, Mort opens the front door and stares at the phone before going back out again almost immediately. He comes back in and rushes to answer the phone.
Hello?
Mort?
Oh. Yeah, hi.
I've been so worried about you. Are you okay?
I'm okay, Amy.
Are you sure? When I saw you yesterday, you seemed so strained. I mean...
What?
Do you think things would have been different if we hadn't lost the baby?
Jesus Christ, I don't know. Look, let me call you later. I gotta go. I gotta be somewhere.
What? What is it, Amy?
Breathe. Take a breath. Where are you? You at Ted's?
Yeah.
How are we feeling about old Ted these days?
I don't know. I love him, I guess.
Oh. That's good.
I didn't go with other men, you know. I always wanted to tell you that. I didn't go with other men. Only Ted, and only the last few months after you and me were already over.
Well, if we were over while we were still together, you might have mentioned it because it was news to me.
That's because you weren't there anymore. You were gone all the time.
I worked at home, Amy.
That's not what I mean. Even when you were with me, you were gone up in your head. I don't think that I looked in your eyes and actually saw you looking back at me. I mean, really, with me for the last 2 years.
You know what? You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's all my fault.
No.
That was chicken shit. Ted wanted us to go and tell you together. He kept asking, and I kept putting it off.
I'll never forget that look on your face.
I gotta go.
Wait, can't we just...
No, I've gotta go.
Will you call me if you need me?
I doubt it.
Can I come up there?
Why on earth would you do that, Amy?
You still haven't signed the papers yet, Mort. I know you don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with it either, but come on, everything's been negotiated. We don't disagree on a thing. I don't understand why you won't sign. Don't you want to just get it over with?
Unbelievable. You were worried about me, and I believed. What an idiot.
I am worried. You sound like you did 6 months ago, and I think it's my fault. It's my fault, and I wish I could take it back, but I can't.
Well, I guess you shouldn't have fucked him then!
Mort flexes his jaw and walks out of the cabin, slamming the door behind him. Amy fetches a jacket.
You're not going up there.
I'm not going to dance around this anymore. Once he signs the papers, it'll be over. We won't have to have these horrible conversations every other day.
All right, well, I'm going with you.
I really think I should go alone, Ted.
That makes no sense.
Just the sight of you is going to send him. I was married to the guy for 10 years. I know how to talk to him. All I want is for this to be over. Excuse me. I'll be back around 7.
Amy goes, and Ted punches a wooden beam in frustration. As Mort's getting out of his car outside a post office, the sheriff spots him.
Hey, Mr. Rainey!
He dashes on into the post office.
Hey, Mr. Rainey. Mr. Rainey, are you all right?
I'm sorry, my throat just kind of double-clutched on me there for a second.
You're very pale.
Yeah, thank you. Did the, UPS guy drop anything off for me?
Just the one thing.
Pardon me?
Just the one thing I said.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome. You know, the post office would have a cow if they knew we handled the UPS guy's stuff.
I know that, and I certainly appreciate it.
You won't tell them, will you?
No way.
Good. Because I saw what you did.
Looking shocked, Mort turns around to face the girl.
I'm sorry?
I said they'd shoot me if you did. You ought to go home and lie down, Mr. Rainey. You really don't look well at all.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Cute.
Back in his car, Mort's about to open the package when he spots the sheriff approaching. He quickly starts the engine, but the sheriff leans in through the passenger window, smiling.
Got a minute?
Well, no, I really don't right now, but I'll give you a call later.
Okay, sure.
Mort drives off.
I'm gonna call you on the phone, okay?
Okay.
As Ted's heading out his front door, Mort's pulling into the driveway of the cabin. He shuts off the engine and picks up the package. He sees that one corner has been ripped open already. He finishes the job and pulls out a magazine entitled Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine.
1995. Contents. 83.
He flips through the pages.
81. 99.
The pages in between are missing.
99. You cut it out. You son of a bitch. You cut it out of the magazine.
Wait a minute. How would he do that?
I don't know. But he did it.
Think about it. How?
I don't know.
In the cabin, Shooter's hat still rests on the coffee table as Mort comes in and sits on the sofa. He looks down at it, then picks it up, studying the inside. After a moment, he puts it on his head. Giving his jaw a vigorous flex, Mort stands up and walks towards the large mirror opposite. He looks at his reflection, running his fingers along the brim of the hat.
Why'd you put it on?
I don't know.
Maybe he wanted you to.
Why would he want me to put his hat on?
Maybe he wants you to.
Maybe he wants me to what?
To get confused. Oh, I'm already confused, Pilgrim.
Plenty confused. So don't talk to me about confusion.
Wait a minute now, back up just a sec. What about that?
What about what?
Well, Pilgrim, Shooter's Bay, and the half a dozen other details you've chosen to ignore.
You know what? You're nuts. I don't need to listen to this shit from you.
Are all these things coincidences?
I'm wearing his bruises, aren't I? Aren't I?
Are you?
Well?
This doesn't make any sense. Would you like to hear something that does make sense? Call the police. Call Dave Newsom, tell him to get down here right this second and lock you up before you can do any more damage. I'm gonna get a knife and cut you out of me. Before you kill anyone else.
I didn't kill anybody.
In the motel bedroom, Mort points a gun.
You had a gun.
It wasn't loaded.
Really?
No.
You almost killed them. You wanted to.
The gun was not loaded!
You still want to.
Shut up!
Listen to me, because this is how it happens. This is how it happens.
Shut
to
up!
People. There is no John Shooter.
Rah!
There never has
Rah!
Been. You invented him.
Rah! Rah!
Listen to me, not to him. Before it's too late.
Leave me alone!
He throws an ashtray.
You are alone.
Mort's doppelganger has disappeared, and he looks on in bewilderment as the dent the ashtray left in the wall produces a crack that tears its way upwards and across the ceiling. The crack splits its way down the other side of the cabin.
No idea what you're doing.
Potato chips this way for 30
years. What you're doing is wrong.
For 30 years.
Mort's reflection in the mirror has its back turned to him.
Sister found out about the problem, and the school had to be withdrawn from the competition. Sister found out about the broken windows.
He steps towards the mirror.
Todd Downing thought that woman who was still here. What is your Todd Downing got to do with
everything?
I'm starting to believe Todd Downing was right.
Everything that you're doing is wrong.
What is happening to me?
Oh, I think you know. I think you have a real good idea.
You don't exist.
Me? I exist, Mr. Rainey. I exist because you made me.
Check it out.
You thought me up.
I'm a dairy farmer from Mississippi.
Gave me my name. Told me everything you wanted me to do.
A flashback to Mort lighting the champagne bottle and setting the house ablaze. He walks off wearing the hat as an inferno engulfs the place.
I did them things so you wouldn't have to.
Right up there, Tom. We were standing right there.
Yeah, I know, Mort. I saw you. I didn't want to say it in front of him, but you were alone.
I know, Tom. Look, just pull over for a second. I want to show you something.
The attic.
Didn't have the stomach to do it yourself, but you knew I did. Are we done yet? We got things all cleaned up around here? What's the real reason I come for?
Fix the story.
That's right.
Fix the ending. Gotta fix the ending.
And how exactly do you suppose we ought to do that?
Shooter hands the black hat to Mort. Mort turns to see a silver car pulling up outside the cabin. Zooming through the reflection in the mirror to where the car is stopped. The door opens. And Amy gets out.
Mort?
She's walking towards the house when she stoops to pick up a piece of paper that's blown against her foot. It's the first page of a printed short story entitled Secret in Mort's Car. Amy opens the door at the end of the porch and walks past the large round stone to the back door. Hesitantly, she knocks. She tries the handle and pushes the door open a little.
Mort? Are you there? I saw your car outside.
She steps into the cabin.
Hello?
She's surprised to find the place is a total mess, with papers lying all over the floor. An overturned chair lies amidst the chaos, and Chico's basket is surrounded by a scattering of books. Amy sighs heavily.
Mort?
She ventures further into the cabin.
Chico?
Writing an overturned lamp, Amy notices the dent in the wall. Looking concerned, she spots the empty packet of cigarettes and a bottle of whiskey on the coffee table. The bottle's nearly empty.
That explains a lot.
She moves towards the windows.
What the hell?
The word shooter has been daubed across the blinds. Hearing a noise from behind her, Amy turns and looks past the balcony of the upper floor. Slowly, she begins to climb the stairs, stepping on the mystery magazine as she does so. Reaching the upper floor, Amy looks through to see the bedroom is in as much disarray as the rest of the cabin. She She walks over to Mort's writing desk, where she finds a grubby manuscript. She picks it up to discover the word shooter has been carved 5 times into the wood beneath. She drops the manuscript back down and looks around, realizing that the word shooter is everywhere, carved into the coffee table down below and all over the sloped wooden walls around her. Amy gasps as the door to the bedroom closes, revealing Mort standing between the carved-out words shoot and her. He stares at her menacingly. He doesn't respond, and Amy edges closer.
Jesus, Mort. Where'd you get that old thing, the attic?
It's mine. Wasn't ever anybody else's.
Mort, what's wrong?
You got you a wrong number, missus. Ain't no Mort here. Mort's dead. He did a whole lot of squirming around, but in the end, he couldn't lie to himself anymore, let alone to me. Now, I never put a hand on him, missus. I swear. He took the coward's way out.
Why are you talking this way, Mort?
It's just the way I talk.
You scared me.
It don't matter. You won't be scared long.
Brandishing scissors, Mort makes a grab for Amy's hair, but she lashes out and flees the cabin. Running full pelt, she jumps into a car and locks the door. Panicking, she struggles to start the car while Mort is laying down the scissors on the porch, picking up the large round stone in their stead. Amy fails to get the car in gear, and Mort calmly approaches and smashes the passenger window in. He leans inside just as Amy finds a gear and the car speeds backwards. Mort manages to drag Amy from the vehicle. She falls to the ground, and he grabs her jacket, forcibly pulling her back to the cabin, where he grabs a screwdriver from a table.
I'm about done fussing with you.
He stabs her in the leg, but Amy retaliates, kicking him in the face and making a break for a side door. Mort kicks her as she reaches it, though, and Amy falls to the ground outside, striking her head on a rock.
I am so sorry, missus, but right is right and fair is fair, and something has got to be done. By the way, I want you to know that none of this was my idea. It was Mr. Rainey all along.
You are Mort Rainey.
I got a place for you.
You are Mort Rainey.
I got it all picked out.
Mort's hovering over Amy with his shovel resting on his shoulder. A noise distracts him, and he turns away. He steps closer to the cabin.
Amy! Amy!
Ted enters the cabin. Ted comes running, only to be smashed in the face by Mort's shovel. He falls to the ground and rolls across it. Mort smiles at Amy, and she watches, horrified, as he finishes Ted off with violent stabs of the shovel. Mort turns his attention back to Amy.
I know I can do it, Todd Downey said. Helping himself to another ear of corn from the steaming bowl. I'm sure that in time, her death will be a mystery. Even to me.
From the cabin in the woods to the waters of the lake, Mort breezes into the general store diner, greeting the people there with a cheery smile. The girl from the post office is amongst the customers.
Hi. Hi.
She ignores him and puts some items on the counter.
I'm kind of late.
She seems uncomfortable. Mort comes to stand behind her, putting his face up close to hers.
Hi.
Hey. Racist. Getting a few things straightened out.
She just nods.
Hey, you know, I was kind of wondering if, sometime you might possibly be interested.
I don't need a bag.
The girl goes, and Mort puts his own shopping items on the counter. The sheriff's car is pulling up at the cabin, where the trees are now displaying their autumnal colors. He gets out and walks to the front door, which is open. He peers inside.
Mr. Rainey? Your front door's open. I'm coming in.
The place is in good order, with a set of weightlifting equipment set up near an open fire. The sheriff goes through to the kitchen, where he finds a pot of corn on the stove, and more corn piled in the sink and on the surfaces. He paces back to the living room.
Mr. Rainey. Mort Rainey.
Oh, hi, Dave. I didn't hear you. Come on up. Glad you're here. I could use the break. Working lunch. I'm on a roll.
Yeah. Listen, both you and I know what you did.
Oh.
Maybe we don't have enough to put you away right now, but eventually we'll find those bodies. We'll tie you to them, and you're going away. In the meantime, I'd appreciate it if you didn't come into town anymore. Makes people uncomfortable. You can do your shopping in New London. Did you hear what I said?
Sure. No problem. You know, the only thing that matters is the ending. It's the most important part of the story, the ending. And this one is very good. This one's perfect.
Mort flexes his jaw and, putting on some headphones, returns to his writing.
I know I can do it, Todd Downey said, helping himself to another ear of corn from the steaming bowl. I'm sure that in time, every bit of her will be gone, and her death will be a mystery. Even to me.
Outside, beneath the secret window, the garden is overgrown with corn plants. Inside, Mort takes a hungry bite from an ear of corn.